Chapter 12. At Cadia, by Terse. The Pylons. Talking with Neve. A bitter autumn wind was coming down off the moors, and the turning ribbon leaves of the axle trees were beginning to fall. They fluttered past me like dry strands of black kelp, and collected in slowly decomposing drifts on the windward side of the graves and the low stone walls. Above, the overcast sky was full of racing brown clouds. I followed the old, overgrown path up the wooded slope, under the hissing axle trees, and stood for a while alone, looking down at the wide grave field and a little shrine tower that watched over it. There was no sign of life, and, apart from the wind, no movement. Even the airshay that had brought me here from the landing fields at Kasr Tairok had departed. I almost missed the driver's grumbles that the place was so far out of town. Far away, almost out of sight beyond the glowering moors, I saw the nearest of the famed mysterious pylons, an angular silhouette. Even from this distance I could hear the strange moaning note the wind made as it blew through the pylons' geometries, geometries that thousands of years of human scholarship had failed to explain. This was my first time on the world they called the Gatehouse of the Imperium. So far, it was not endearing itself to me.
"So, Thorn, you were none too sharp, were you?"
I turned slowly. He had arrived behind me, as silent as the void itself.
"Well," he asked, "what time do you call this?"
"I consider myself suitably chastened," I said. He was impassive, then the scar under his milky eye twitched, and he smiled.
"Welcome to Cadia, Eisenhorn," said Fischig.
Aside from Amos, Godwin Fischig was my longest-serving companion, though he and Beckwin often disputed that record. I'd met them both on Hubris, during my hunt for the Chaos Broker Eiklone, which led in turn to the whole bloody affair of the Necrotuke. I'd actually encountered Fischig first. He'd then been a chastener in the local Arbites, ordered to keep a watch on me. He became my ally through circumstance. Beckwin had crossed my path, if my memory serves, about a day later, but I had co-opted her almost directly into my service, while Fischig had remained, technically, a serving Arbites officer for some considerable time before resigning to join me. Which is why Beckwin claimed the prize, and why they sometimes fell to disputing it when the hour was late and the Amasek unstoppered. He was a big man of my own age, his cropped blonde hair now turning silver. But he was as robust as ever, clad in a coat of black fur, a mail surcoat and steel-fronted boots. He shook my hand.
"I was beginning to think you wouldn't make it."
"I was beginning to think so, too." He cocked his head slightly.
"Trouble?"
"Like you wouldn't believe. Let's walk, and I'll tell you." We wandered back down the tree-shrouded path together. He knew something of the atrocity on Thracian, which was by then some 7 months past, but he had no idea I had been caught up in it. When I told him the details, especially about Ravenna, his face darkened. He had admired Gideon. Frankly, it had been difficult not to admire Gideon, and I sometimes felt that Gideon was the man Fischig would have liked to have been. Fischig's great strength was his self-knowledge. He understood his own limitations. His strengths were loyalty, physical power, fine combat skills, observation, and a nose for detail. He was not quick-witted, and his abhorrence of book learning meant that even the rank of interrogator was beyond him. Though he would have loved to rise formally through the ranks of the Inquisition, he had never tried, contenting himself with becoming one of the fundamental components of my staff. To try, he knew, would have meant failure, and Godwin Fischig hated to fail. We crossed the narrow funeral lane and went into the grave field by the old lich gate in the low wall. I told him about Lyko and Asaradon. I told him about the warnings from Endor and Lord Rorkon. I told him about the bloody inconclusive mess on Ichan. I told him about Cherubael. "I would have come as soon as I received your message, but Rorkon practically forbade me. And then, as you have heard, matters got out of hand." He nodded.
"Don't worry. I'm a patient man."
We stood for a moment in the middle of the vast field of graves. Several shivering priests in ragged black robes were wandering through the lines of crumbling gravestones, pausing to study each one. "What are they doing?"
"Reading the names," he said.
"What for?"
"To see if they can be read."
"Okay. Why?"
As you might imagine, a martial world like this produces many dead. Long ago, an edict was made by the planetary government that only certain fields of land could ever be used for burial. So cemetery space is at an optimum, hence the law of decipherability. Which is? The law states that once the eroding hands of time and the elements have made the last names on a field's gravestones illegible, the anonymous dead may be exhumed, the bodies buried in a pit, and the field reused. So they tend the field for years until the names can no longer be read. He shrugged. It's their way. Once the names have vanished, so has the memory, and so has any need for honour. The time's coming for this place. Another year or two, they tell me. That struck me as infinitely melancholic. Cadia was a warrior world, standing guard in the one navigable approach to the warp tumult of the infamous Eye of Terror. The region, known as the Cadian Gate, is the route of choice for invasions of chaos, and Cadia is seen by most as the Imperium's first line of defense. It has bred elite troops since it was first colonized, and billions of its sons and daughters have died bravely, protecting our culture. Died bravely, then left to slowly vanish in the desolate fields of their homeworld. It was dismal, but probably entirely in keeping with the stoic martial mindset of the Cadians. Fischig pushed open the heavy axle-wood door of the shrine tower, and we went inside out of the wind. The tower was a single chamber, a drum of stone, with weep-hole window slits high up near the summit. A circle of rough wooden pews was arranged around a central altarpiece, above which a massive iron candelabra in the form of a double-headed eagle was suspended on a chain from the beamed roof. On this dark autumn day, the light from the votive candles fixed amongst the metal feathers of the Aquila's unfurled wings was the only illumination. There was a spare, thin, golden light, an atmosphere of frugality and numinous grace, and a musty stink of rotting axle leaves. We sat together on a pew, both of us briefly honouring the altar with the sign of the Aquila, our hands splayed together against our hearts. "It's strange," sighed Fischig after a long pause. "You sent me out, over a year ago, on yet another quest for signs of that demon-spawn Cherubael, and just when I find a trace, you run into him again, on the other side of the damned sector." Strange is possibly not the word I'd use. "But the coincidence." "Is it coincidence?" "I don't know. It seems so much like it, but that thing, Cherubael, disarms me so." "Naturally, old friend." I shook my head. "Not because of his power. Not that."
"Then what?"
"The way he speaks to me. The way he says he's using me.
Demon guile,
perhaps. But he knows so much. He knows... Oh, damn it, he speaks as if our destinies are irrevocably entwined. Like... he matters to me, and vice versa."
"He does matter to you."
"I know, I know. As my goal, my prey, my nemesis. But he talks like it's more than that. Like he can see the future, or can read it, or has even been there. He talks to me like he knows what I'm going to do." Fischig frowned.
"And what do you think that might be?"
I rose and stalked to the altar.
"I have no idea. I can't conceive of doing anything that would please or benefit a demon. I can't even imagine myself that insane. Trust me, Eisenhorn, if ever I thought you were, I'd shoot you myself."
I glanced back at him. "Please do." I halted and looked up into the flickering flames of the candles, seeing the many shadows and possible shadows of myself they cast, interlapping and crisscrossing the stone floor, like the myriad possibilities of the future. I tried not to look into the thicker, blacker shadows.
"The warp-spawned bastard's just playing games with you," said Fischig. "That's all it is. Games to put you off the scent and keep you at bay."
"If that's the case, why does he keep saving my life?" We went back out into the moorland wind. The moaning of the pylon seemed louder to me now.
"Who's with you?" Fischig asked.
"Amos, Beckwin, Nail, Medea, Husman, and a lad you've not met, Inchabel. We came here directly from Ishan."
"Long ride?"
"Best part of 6 months. We got as far as Mordir on a free trader called the Best of Eagles, and then came the rest of the way as guests of the Adeptus Mechanicus, the super-heavy barge Mons Olympus, no less.
carrying virgin titans to the garrisons of the Cadian Gate. Quite an honour. The Inquisitor's rosette carries its benefits. But I tell you, the tech priests of Mars are damned surly company for a 2-month voyage. I would have gone mad but for Beckwin's regicide tournaments. Nail getting any better? No. I think by now he owes me, what is it, his firstborn and his soul? Fischig laughed. Oh, it wasn't all so bad. There was one fellow, a veteran princeps from the Titan Legion. Old guy, centuries old. At the point of retirement, like those men ever retire. He was supervising the transfer of the new war machines. Name of Hecate. We got to drinking some nights. Remind me to tell you some of his war stories. I will. Come on. He had a land speeder parked down off the lane under the swaying axle trees. We brushed fallen ribbon leaves off the hood and got in. Let me show you what I found. Then we can all meet and greet in a safe place. How safe? The safest. We flew over the moorlands, into the biting winds, hugging the terrain. The light was fading. The grim glory of Cadia was spread out below us. This was the merciless, wind-blown wilderness that raised one of the Imperium's hardiest warrior breeds. Here were the scattered islets in the Caducade Sea, where they were left naked as prepubescents to survive the ritual month of making. Here were the hill forts, where the Cadian youth armies wintered and toughened and waged mock wars on their neighbour forts. Here were the crags, ice lakes, and axle forests, where they learned the arts of camouflage. Here were the wide, sundered plains where their live firing exercises were staged. There is a saying, if the ammo ain't live, this ain't no Cadian practice. Right from the time they are issued with their own las guns, which is about the same time they are given their first primary readers, the young warrior caste of Cadia are handling live ammunition. Most can fire and kill and perform most infantry field drills before they reach the age of 10 standard. Little wonder that the shock troops of Cadia are among the Imperium's best. But we weren't here to gawp at the rugged crucible of landscape that had formed the Cadians. We were here to look at the pylons.
Cherubiel's been here, said Fischig, jockeying the control stick and eyeing the wind speed gauge. Far as I know, 9 times in the last 40 years.
You're sure?
It's what you pay me for. Your demon host, and whatever he's working for, is fascinated by Cadia.
Why have the Inquisition not had a hint of it?
Come on, Gregor. The galaxy is big. Amos once told me that the weight of data generated by the Imperium would fry all the matriculators and codifiers on Terra in a flash if it was input simultaneously. It's a matter of making connections, sifting the data. The Inquisition and you have been looking all over for signs of Cherubiel, but some things just don't flag. I got lucky.
How?
I was doing my job. Old friend of mine, Isaac Acti, from the old Arbites day. Used to be my boss, in fact. He rose, got promoted, wound up on Hydrafer as an Arbites general, and then got stationed here as watch overseer to the Cadian Interior Guard. I contacted him years ago and got a message I had to check.
You're intriguing me. He ran us low over a headland, and our speeder made a small, sharp shadow on the glittering ice lake below.
Actis said the Arbites had closed down a heretical cell here on Cadia about 10 years ago. Called themselves the Sons of Baal. A fairly worthless lot, by all accounts. Harmless. But under interrogation, they'd admitted to following a demon they called Baal, or the Baal. The local Inquisitor General spent some time with them, and had them all burned.
What's his name?
Gorfau. But he's dead. 3 years gone. The current incumbent is a she. Inquisitor General Neve. Anyway, the cell has flared up a few times since then. Nothing a good team of riot officers couldn't handle. Like I said, the Sons of Baal were pretty harmless, really. They were only interested in one thing.
Which was?
Measuring the dimensions of the pylons.
The pylon had been looming in our windscreen for a while now, and Fischig swept us around it, almost kissing the black stone. The moaning song of the wind as it laced through the geometries of the pylon was now so loud I could hear it over the racing turbines of the speeder. The pylon was vast, half a kilometre high and a quarter square. The upper facing of the smooth black stone was machined with delicate craft to form holes and other round-edged orifices no bigger than a man's head. It was through these slim 250-meter tubes that the wind moaned and howled. And the tubes weren't straight. They wove through the pylon like worm tunnels. Tech Magos had tried running tiny servitor probes through them to map their loops, but generally the probes didn't come back. As we banked up higher for another pass, I could see the distant shape of the neighboring pylon, across the moors, 60 kilometers away. 5,810 known pylons dot the surface of Cadia, not counting the 2,000 others that remain as partial ruins or buried relics. No two are identical in design. Each one rises to a precise half-kilometer height and is sunk a quarter-kilometer into the ground. They predate mankind's arrival in this system, and their manner of manufacture is unknown. They are totally inert by any Auspex measure known to our race, but many believe their presence explains the quieting of the violent warp torrents that make the Cadia Gate the single, calm, navigable route to the Ocularis Terribus. They were trying to measure this thing. Uh-huh, Fischig replied clearly over the speeder's drive as we pulled another hard turn. This and several others. They had Auspex and geolocators and magnetic plums. Finding the exact dimensions, and I do mean exact, was the entire goal of the Sons of Baal. They connect with Cherubael. I mean, beyond the Baal part. The interview logs I've read show they name Baal fully as a god called Cherub of Baal, who came amongst them and made demands that they measure the pylons in return for great knowledge and power. And the Inquisitor General, this Gorfowl, he suppressed this, not deliberately. I think he was just sloppy. I want to speak with the current Inquisitor General. Neve, did you say her name was? Yeah, I thought you might. While daylight remained, we flew west to Cazadirth, the largest castellum in the region and the seat of provincial government for the Caducades. Fischig switched on the speeder's voxponder and broadcast the day's access codes to the sentry turrets as we passed the outer ring ditch. Even so, Manticore and Hydra batteries traversed and tracked us as we went over. The voxponder pinged fretfully as it detected multiple target locks. Don't worry, said Fischig, noticing my look. We're safe. I think the Cadians enjoy taking every possible opportunity to practice. We ran down the line of a slow-moving convoy. Drab, armored 12-wheeled transports, escorted by lurching sentinel walkers, and followed the highway up towards the ridge of the earthwork. Beyond it, and two more like it, the heavy grey fortifications and shatrophies of Cazadirth sulked in the twilight. Watchlights on skeleton towers stood on the upper slope of the earthwork. More turret emplacements and pillboxes studded the defence berm like knuckles. Again, the voxponder pinged. Fischig dropped the speed and altitude and swung us down towards the eastern barbican, a small fortress in its own right, bristling with earthshaker platforms. A bas-relief imperial eagle decorated the upper face of the ashlar-dressed structure. We ran in through the barbican's gate, over the hydraulic bascule that crossed the inner moat, and into the castellum's deliberately narrow and twisting streets. Cadia's earliest casiers had been built in the high terra style, with the wide streets laid out on a grid system. In early M32, a chaos invasion had made wretchedly short work of three of them. The broad, ordered avenues had proved impossible to defend or hold. Since then, the casiers had been planned in elaborate geometric patterns, the streets jinking back and forth like the teeth of a key. From the air, Cazadirth looked like an intricate, angular puzzle. Given the Cadians' mettle and their skills at urban war, a Kazir could be held, street by street, meter by meter, for months, if not years. We slunk along the busy, labyrinthine streets as the caged lamps came on and business began to shut for the night. I was about to remark to Fischig that it looked for all the world like a military camp, until I realized that even the civilian fashion was for camouflaged clothing. It soon became easy to pick out locals from visitors. The jag-white and grey of tundra dress or the panelled green and beige of moor fatigues marked out newcomers and off-duty soldiery. The population of Cazadirth wore grey and brown checkered urban camouflage. We passed the stilted horiums of the Imperial Cadian Granary and the tight-packed baileys of the rich and successful. Even the townhouses of the wealthy had armouring on their mansard roofs. To the left lay the brightly lit Aleatorium, to which night crowds were already flocking to gamble away their pay. To the right, Cassius Sennaculum, with its gleaming, ceramite-plated Shatrovi pyramid. Ahead lay the Minster of the Inquisition. The Voxponder pinged again as the gun walls along the deep approach followed us. Fischig settled the speeder down on the Speakeye Testikeye paving of the Minster's inner yard, where sunken guide lights stitched out a winking cross. Inquisitorial guards in gold-laced burgundy armor approached us as we swung back the speeder's canopy and climbed out. I showed the nearest one my rosette. He clipped his heels together and saluted.
My lord.
I wish to see the Inquisitor General.
I will inform her staff,
he said obediently, and hurried away across the herringbone paving, holding up his baldric so his power sword wouldn't trip him.
You won't like her,
Fischig said as he came round the parked speeder to join me. Why?
Ah, trust me. You just won't.
It's late. I had finished business for the day,
said Inquisitor General Neve, stabbing her hollow quill back into the brass power well on the desk. My apologies, madam.
Don't bother. I'm not about to shut my doors to the famous Inquisitor Eisenhorn. We're a long way from the Helican sub, but your fame precedes you.
In a good way, I hope. The Inquisitor General rose from her writing desk and straightened the front of her green flannel robe. She was a short, sturdy woman in her late 110s, if my eye was any judge, with salt-and-pepper hair plied back tightly into a bourse. She had the typical pale, tight flesh and violet eyes of Acadian.
Whatever, she snapped.
We stood in her sanctum, an octa-style chamber with a black and white Cosmati floor and ethersite walls, inscribed with a waterleaf design. It was lit with rushlights, and the flame glow accented the carved lotus motif. Inquisitor General Neve clumped around her desk to face us, leaning on an ornate silver crutch.
You'll want to be reviewing the Bael records, I suppose.
How did you guess? I asked. She favoured her weight on her sound foot and pointed the rubber-capped toe of the crutch at Fischig.
Him. I know. He's been here before. One of yours, I suppose, Inquisitor.
One of my best. She arched her spare, plucked eyebrows.
Huh. Much that says about you. Come on. The archivum.
A dim screw stair led down to the basement archivum. The turning steps of the spiral were hard for her to manage, but she shooed me away curtly when I offered to assist her. I meant no insult, Inquisitor General, I said.
Your kind never do, she snapped.
I felt it wasn't the moment to inquire what kind that might be. The archivum was a long, panelled chamber, lit only by the lamps of the double-faced desk row that ran down its middle.
Light boy,
Neve snarled, and a servitor skull drifted down from the coffered ceiling, hovering at her shoulder and igniting its halogen eye-beams.
Bael, sons of find, she told it,
and it coursed away, turning and dipping, sweeping the racks of the catalogue with its twin spears of light. It stopped 8 sections down and began to buzz around a shelf groaning with data slates, file tubes, and dusty paper books. Fischig and I followed Neve as she hobbled over to join it.
Sons of Truth. Sons of Macarius. Sons of Bitches.
She glanced round at me.
That passes for humour here, Eisenhorn.
I'm sure it does, madam. Her fingers went back to the stacks, running along the fraying spines and tagged slate sleeves, following the skull boy's light beams.
Sons of Barbarus. Sons of Balkar. Here it is. Sons of Bael.
She pulled a file case off the shelf, blew the dust off it into my face, and handed it to me.
Put it back where you found it when you've finished, she said.
She turned to go. Your pardon? Wait, I said. 2 emphatic thumps of her crutch swung her around to face me again.
What?
Your predecessor.
Gorfal,
whispered Fischig. Gorfal. He burned the members of this cult without examination. Have you never reviewed the case? She smiled at me. It wasn't encouraging.
You know, Eisenhorn, I always imagined roving inquisitors like you had adventurous, exciting lives. Also very exhilarating, all that celebrity and heroism and notoriety. To think I used to dream of being like you. You have no idea, do you?
With respect, Inquisitor General. Of what? She gestured at the file case I was clutching.
The crap. The nonsense. The bric-a-brac. The Sons of Bael. Why the hell should I review that case? It's dead, dead and nothing. A bunch of fools who were pulled off the Westmoreland pylon in the middle of the night for playing around with geolocators? Whoa, I'm so scared. Imagine that. They're measuring us. Do you have any idea what this wardship is like?
Inquisitor General, I...
Do you? This is Cadia, you silly fool. Cadia! Right on the doorway of chaos. Right in the heart of everything. The seepage of evil is so great, I have 100 active cults to subdue every month. 100! The place breeds recidivists like a pond breeds scum. I sleep 3 or 4 hours a night if I'm lucky. My vox chimes and I'm up, called out to another nest of poison that the Arbetes have uncovered. Firefights in the street, Eisenhorn. Running battles with the foot soldiers of the arch-enemy. I can barely keep up with the day-to-day banishments. Forget the past cases my crap-witted predecessor filed. This is Cadia. This is the Gate of the Eye. This is where the bloody work of the Inquisition is done. Don't distract me with stories of some engineering club gone bad.
My apologies.
Taken. See yourselves out.
She limped away. Neve? She turned. I dropped the file case onto the reading table. They might have been idiots, I said, but they're the only solid link I have to a demon host that could destroy us all.
A demon host?
She said. That's right. And the beast that controls it. A beast that, if I'm right, is one of ours. She lurched back down the archivum.
Convince me, she said.